This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
More restrictions lifted. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, October 13, glad you could be with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
The Biden administration plans to relax restrictions soon on land border crossings between Canada and Mexico for non-essential travel like tourism.
The House has voted along party lines to increase the government's debt ceiling until early December.
The White House is hosting a meeting today to discuss supply chain issues that could disrupt delivery of holiday gifts.
And how to stay the course on a job search even when recruiters are ignoring you.
One of the things is to adjust your own expectations and make sure they're really reasonable. You know, unfortunately, there are going to be jobs you apply for and hear nothing back, maybe many of them. You need to not get to a place where you're relying on hearing back from everyone with positive news because you're going to get really, really down really quickly.
Catherine Dill at the Wall Street Journal has interviewing and resume tips to help you stand out in the current environment. The Department of Homeland Security is easing restrictions on land border crossings from Canada and Mexico for things like shopping or visiting with family and friends. However, you have to be fully vaccinated. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Beginning in early November, foreign nationals for the first time in 20 months will be allowed to enter the U.S. through land or ferry ports for non-essential purposes. Unvaccinated travelers will only be able to use land crossings into the U.S. for essential purposes. Foreign travelers will be able to show vaccination status in either a paper or digital format. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is expected to give an update on what sort of paperwork will be accepted at the borders in the coming days. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. In January, the U.S. will extend the land border vaccine requirement to foreign nationals coming to the U.S. for essential travel. Government officials haven't announced which vaccines will be accepted at the borders, but it's likely to be Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and others approved by the FDA. The Labor Department has taken the next step to implement President Biden's plan to require private sector workers with 100 or more employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19 or be regularly tested. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, submitted the initial text yesterday to the White House for approval. Meanwhile, Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva says he won't enforce a vaccine mandate at the department. The reason, he told Fox News, he doesn't want to lose a significant number of his workforce.
I know my employees very well, and I cannot afford to lose 5 to 10% of my employees overnight who will react to someone trying to impose something.
OSHA's announcement comes a day after Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order banning businesses and other private entities in his state from requiring COVID-19 vaccinations. That's now causing confusion for businesses, especially those such as airlines, retailers, and oil companies that operate in multiple states. As expected, the House has passed legislation raising the nation's borrowing limit for several weeks, allowing the government to keep paying its bills into early December and avoiding the economic chaos that would have come if the U.S. defaulted. By raising the debt ceiling temporarily, lawmakers set up another debt ceiling fight in early December when they'll be tasked with finding a long-term solution. Pennsylvania Republican Mike Kelly.
Between funded and unfunded liabilities, America is on the hook for $130 trillion. This is a pathway to destruction.
Democrat Jim McGovern of Massachusetts.
Let's understand this. We are paying Donald Trump's bills. If you don't want to pay the bills, you shouldn't have voted for the things that caused this debt to begin with.
The bill would increase the debt ceiling by $480 billion, an amount that the Treasury Department has said would allow the U.S. to pay its bills through December 3rd. President Biden is expected to sign it. Coming up next, can the Biden administration improve the supply chain misery?
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. President Biden is expected to host a meeting today on supply chains as disruptions have led to lower world growth forecasts and threaten to snarl the holiday shopping season. Among those invited, the leaders of Home Depot, UPS, and Walmart. Meanwhile, the Biden administration fears major shipping industry bottlenecks during the holiday shopping season. Christian Daytok, White House reporter at the Washington Examiner, explores whether the Biden administration feels it's on the hook for Christmas gifts. Christian set this up.
Well, the White House has been focused, laser focused, really, on supply chains, not only since President Biden came into office, but in June specifically. They stood up this supply chain task force, and they were particularly focused on food prices, on the semiconductor shortage, which isn't just a coronavirus problem. This is spanning back a couple of years now. And then just a couple of other critical sectors. But as coronavirus has continued and as the Delta variant has caused a whole bunch of production shortages in some of these Asian factories in particular, we're seeing a massive, massive backlog on semiconductors, on electronics. And the White House is trying to address this, but there's another factor that's come into play here, and it's the massive demand that we're seeing domestically from Americans, not only looking to sort of shake off that coronavirus, sleep that we've had for the last year and a half, but they've got some new added salaries and money to burn heading into the holiday season. So these two factors have really slammed the shipping industry, both incoming freight from overseas, specifically in the Port of Los Angeles, and the actual ground transportation operation here run by the U.S. Postal Service, UPS, and others.
If I recall from your story, you said that the ports of L.A. and Long Beach, I think, are only operating at like 60% capacity. How's that possible?
Well, again, coronavirus mitigation strategies have forced down the number of workers who can be at the docks, but they're also, because of the labor shortages in California, unable to get some of these overtime workers to come in and work off hours. Now, that is one area that the White House is particularly focused on. They named a new port envoy who's been coordinating between the local unions and the port officials, and they've actually managed, since this official has been installed in late August, they've reduced wait time for freight from around 14 and a half days down to 3 days. Now, the real problem is, though, this is already too late in the game. There's such a massive backlog that it doesn't look like these commercial goods are going to be able to, A, hit shelves in stores, and B, go directly to homes from people who've purchased them online in time for the holidays.
Wow. We're speaking with Christian Daytok, White House correspondent at the Washington Examiner. His piece is called Grinch Pinch: Biden Officials Fear They Won't Be Able to Stop Holiday Season Shortages. Is the Biden administration concerned that they're going to get the blame if holiday packages are late?
Well, publicly, they're not saying that they're worried. They are saying that we are having a limited, albeit smaller in scope than we'd hoped, impact on the supply chain shortages. But this is, at its core, a long-term issue, and that's why we need to pass the infrastructure plan.
Is there somebody taking a stab at when normalcy will return for goods being shipped overseas?
Well, Secretary Pete Buttigieg at the Department of Transportation estimated that these delays will probably resolve themselves, the holiday delays, that is, by January or February. But Scott Price, who's the international president of UPS, thought it might be much further into 22 that these delays would persist. So again, this is a compounding problem. We've got the short-term coronavirus problems compounding the already broken infrastructure of the United States that the Biden administration is trying to address. But unless Congress passes that infrastructure bill, the long-term effects won't be solved until, you know, years down the line.
Yeah. Is there some way that infrastructure addresses not having enough bodies at the ports of L.A. and Long Beach?
Well, if you ask the port officials and the union officials out in L.A., they'd say the obvious answer is to raise wages. And while the president's proposals don't have a $15 minimum wage included in them, we do know that's an issue that he's been pushing since the 2020 campaign. So if these two bills go through, that won't be addressed. But that's certainly something I'd expect the president to keep his eye on down the line.
Thanks, Christian. Christian Daytalk, White House reporter at the Washington Examiner. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
House lawmakers have approved a $480 billion hike to the debt ceiling, averting a potentially catastrophic U.S. default for at least another 2 months, and teeing up another showdown over a long-term solution, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
This is about meeting obligations that the government has already incurred, including from the bipartisan COVID relief legislation passed last year.
The resolution, expected to be signed quickly by President Biden, will allow the federal government to cover its debt obligations through December 3rd.
Number two.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has directed U.S. immigration authorities to stop mass worksite arrests of undocumented immigrants. He also says enforcement efforts should focus on holding unscrupulous employers accountable. In a memo to immigration agency officials, Mayorkas outlined new enforcement priorities that aim to target employers that exploit unauthorized immigrants. He says such employers often pay substandard wages, subject immigrants to unsafe working conditions, and facilitate human trafficking and child exploitation.
Number three.
Two U.S. Postal Service workers were fatally shot at a postal facility in Memphis yesterday, and a third employee identified as the shooter also died. FBI spokeswoman Lisa Ann Culp.
The shooter is one of the three employees deceased by an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound.
No identities or motive were released by authorities. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Texas Governor Greg Abbott was motivated by politics and not public health concerns when he issued an executive order banning COVID mandates.
Polio, measles, mumps, rubella, the chicken pox. There are vaccine requirements that have been implemented for decades in these states. So these decisions put these two leaders out of step with both longtime requirements, a history of vaccine mandates.
Southwest and American Airlines, both based in Texas, say they plan to follow the federal guidelines and require that their employees are vaccinated. Southwest says the president's executive order supersedes any state mandate or law. A couple of teams are a step closer to the World Series. The Astros are going to the AL Championship Series for the fifth straight year. After ousting the White Sox last night 10-1, the Braves beat the Brewers to move on in the NL Championship, where they'll meet either the Giants or Dodgers. That series goes to a decisive Game 5 tomorrow night in San Francisco.
All right. Thank you, Jen.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
There are more than 10 million job openings in the U.S., so why do so many job seekers remain frustrated by hiring managers who ignore them and online application portals that delete them? Catherine Dill, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says there are a lot of jobs out there, but a lot of rejection, too. Here are some strategies for when that happens. Catherine, what should we do?
One of the things is to adjust your own expectations and make sure they're really reasonable. You know, unfortunately, the answer is that there are going to be jobs you apply for and hear nothing back, maybe many of them. You're going to be contacted by recruiters and then respond to them only to potentially be ignored. You know, those are just sort of the conditions of the environment that we're in. And so you shouldn't take it personally. It's difficult advice to take, but you should keep moving forward and not let it discourage you. You need to not get to a place where you're relying on hearing back from everyone with positive news, because you're going to get really, really down really quickly.
Thought it was interesting. Some of the guidance was, is there anything you're curious about relative to my ability to perform this job? It's almost you're almost asking to start the job or demonstrate that you're ready to start the job.
Yes, absolutely. This was some great advice about how you approach your follow-up. You know, that it shouldn't just be persistently, what about me, what about me, what about me? Even if that's how you're feeling, which is totally understandable, it needs to be broader than that. It needs to demonstrate more consideration of where you are in the job search and how you would join the role than just asking, you know, have you gotten a chance to talk about me yet?
We're speaking with Catherine Dill, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called How to Keep the Job Search Moving Forward, Even If Recruiters Ignore You. What was the point, too? You said, don't worry about beating the bots.
Yeah, you know, this is something we hear a lot from job seekers. There's a great deal of concern about the software that companies use to screen applications and whether it's boxing people out of consideration, which we know, of course, that very often it is. But people sometimes become really obsessed with outsmarting these systems. And it's better to focus on having a really solid resume and then incorporating keywords from the job description into your resume than coming up with some like very elaborate series of tricks that you think is going to get you through the screening. So a great example is if the job description uses the word client, don't use the word customer in your resume. You know, make sure that you're really congruent with the way that a job description is talking about a particular set of skills.
And enough with the objective statements. We don't do that anymore?
Yes, an objective statement, in addition to just eating up valuable real estate on your resume where you want to maintain brevity, is also potentially just giving recruiters the ammunition they may need to throw out your resume, because it's a one-line statement that if it doesn't 100% line up with precisely what the company says they're looking for, it's a great reason to just throw you into the trash.
Finish up with this one, too. Don't so much describe the companies you worked for. Talk about the work you did.
Yes, this is a common misstep, I think, or a tendency among folks who may have worked at startups or small businesses and might be inclined to burn some words on their resume describing what the company does to, in an attempt to make it clearer to their next employer what they can do.
Thanks, Catherine. Catherine Dill, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. First impressions are a big deal, and after the last year of video meetings and remote working, you've got the chance to make a first impression all over again in your professional life. That's the beauty of Indochino. Indochino offers completely custom-fitted suits, shirts, casual wear, and more at surprisingly affordable prices. Every piece is made to your exact measurements, and you can customize every detail. I just ordered a pair of chino pants from their website, and the process was so easy. I was able to measure myself at home in minutes with help from their instructional videos. And everything from the hem to the back pockets are fully customizable. I'm floored that custom-made quality can be so affordable. You have to try it to believe it. Customize your new professional look, book an in-person appointment, or find a brand new Indochino location in a select Nordstrom near you at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more by using the code Gordon at checkout. That's $50 off a purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com. Indochino.com, promo code Gordon.
Taking the day's information and helping you make sense of it all. We're here for you every morning. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, October 13. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Homeland Security will ease land border restrictions with Canada and Mexico. Medical experts say people in their 60s or older should not start taking aspirin to prevent a first heart attack or stroke because of the risk of internal bleeding. 90-year-old actor William Shatner today blasts off on a human spaceflight. First winter storm of the season hits the West. In comparing the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney says the Stones are a blues cover band. And a firefighter's caring moment that's gone viral. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Dell Technologies advisors have the Windows PC and tech solutions you need to help your business stay ahead of the game. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro. The Brooklyn Nets, for now, are benching superstar Kyrie Irving, one of the more prominent players not vaccinated against COVID. New York City health codes mandate at least one COVID vaccine shot to enter indoor gyms. Meanwhile, all the major pro sports leagues have required certain key employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Not required to be vaccinated, though, the players themselves. Players' unions have opposed or avoided such mandates, keeping players free of them. But why? Here to explain is Brent Scrotenboer, reporter at USA Today. Brent, what are the reasons?
Well, this is an issue that needs to be collectively bargained. All the players in the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, those are all player unions representing the players. And in order for the league to impose any mandate on those players, such as a vaccine mandate, they need to collectively bargain that issue. Now, of course, the leagues themselves would love to impose a mandate on the players. They've imposed a mandate on every other worker that it comes within 12 feet of a player, but the players themselves are not under a mandate because their unions don't want it. And it brings up a lot of issues as to why they don't want it. Why are they opposed to vaccine mandates when it would seem that it would be in their interest to? But the bottom line is the players, even though they are vaccinated for the most part, like the NFL, for example, has, I think, a 93% vaccination rate among its players, even though there is no mandate. They're trying to push it voluntarily instead of requiring it.
Mm. Well, you referenced the bottom line. And, you know, revenue-wise, this really could directly impact the bottom line if, say, a state or a city would come in and say, hey, no football, no hockey, you know, till we control this outbreak or something.
Exactly. I mean, we saw last year what the coronavirus did to sports. It shut it down. It decimated the revenue. They had shortened seasons and no fans in the stands, and that's not good for business. And then the vaccine comes around, which in large part enabled sports to come back like normal, where we see full crowds now. That's because the vaccine became widely available earlier this year, and you would think that the players' unions would recognize the business sense of requiring a mandate just to avoid what happened last year. They would not want to see an outbreak, and a vaccine helps prevent outbreaks. So, but the unions are against it, apparently because of a reflexive attitude they have toward really anything that the league wants to push or intrude on the players. It really seems to be a reflexive standpoint that almost anything that the league wants to do or push on the players, it's going to try to oppose, just because I think of their history of having won a lot of rights and benefits and collective bargaining. They just want to, they just have a reflexive attitude toward that kind of intrusion as they view it. But you know, I talked to a former executive director of the NBA Players Union, and he said that these unions are in effect failing their members by not mandating it.
Wow. We're speaking with Brent Schrotenbohr, reporter at USA Today. His story is called "Why Do NFL, NBA, NHL, and MLB Players Unions Oppose Vaccine Mandates?" Are there active discussions between the leagues and these unions?
Well, the leagues all want this, but I think it was just at some point I just said it's a non-starter. That's how I understand one of the unions put it. They're just not going to do it. And it's not just a union thing, because if you look outside of sports, we've got a lot of unions that support mandates, like nurses unions, teachers unions, meat packers unions. They have supported mandates for workers, I think, for the same reason. They see it as in their economic interest to keep business going and to keep their workers safe. There are other unions and workers that oppose the mandates. Police are actively across the country against vaccine mandates. So it really boils down to the culture and the political opinions sometimes of the membership, depending on how they view vaccines. And in this case, in sports, the feeling I got after talking to a former president of the NFL Players Association was that they see this as like, if they open the door to this, even though it might be a good idea, that they believe that the NFL will just try to take more later. It's sort of a reflexive attitude.
Thanks, Brent. Brent Schrotenbohr, reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, the mic drop. Some people treat investing like a game, but not Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Their digitally managed portfolios are backed by over 150 years of financial experience. So play games with your money or put it to work with a digitally managed portfolio from Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Go to Marcus.com to learn more.
Brokerage and advisory services by Goldman Sachs and Company, LLC. Member SIPC. Investments involve risk and may lose value.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, after diving headfirst into the PB&J and beer yesterday, we stay with food and alcohol news today. We start at Panera Bread, which is hoping that you'll enjoy some carbs with a side of carbs and a lot of cheese. The chain is rolling out a mac and cheese sandwich. Panera diners have already had the option of enjoying their mac and cheese in a bread bowl, but this new offering is the handheld variety. Our friend Charles Passy at MarketWatch tried the sandwich, and although he admits that the thought of pasta on bread in any form is a turnoff, he did have some good things to say about it, specifically the Parmesan crisps that are added for extra crunch. One thing you'll have to block out of your mind before diving in is the calorie count. The sandwich weighs in at 860 calories with 1,650 milligrams of sodium.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's something you need, I would say, on a Sunday morning around 11 a.m.
Yeah.
After a hard Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a student, you were up all night studying or something. But
right.
That strikes me 11 a.m. on a Sunday.
I was going to say that you have to be definitely in a certain type of mood, whatever that is. Again, whether it's a hard night of studying, maybe a hard night of drinking, you know, whatever that is. But yeah, you have to come in Sunday morning, definitely a good time for something like that. You're feeling in a mood and you don't care. You're just kind of throwing caution to the wind.
Right.
And maybe this will be your only meal for the day.
Yeah,
you know, and then you go take a nap after this, most likely. And then, you know, that'll be it.
And after the nap, I mean, just put your sweatpants on and hang out on the couch.
Yes.
That's the kind of day you're having when you have this
meal. Just call it the Sunday sandwich.
Yeah. You launch into 7 hours of football.
Yes.
Pretty much.
I agree.
By the way, speaking of the PB&J.
Yeah.
This got a lot of traction on Twitter.
Sure.
So, inevitably, the Uncrustable discussion came out.
Yes.
There's no love for the Uncrustables.
No.
But convenient, yes. Can you freeze them and travel with them? Yes.
If you're five, yes.
If you're five, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
other
it.
Than that, yeah, they didn't get much love. And then one guy, his name is Mark, he's not impressed with peanut butter and jelly the standard way. He's got honey roasted peanut butter and homemade mixed berry jam.
Oh, okay. I mean,
he went totally
getting all fancy,
totally next level.
The artisan, artisanal PB&J.
$28, like at a fancy restaurant or something.
And another day, Gordon, another TikTok trend, but this one comes with a very bold claim. According to a new video hack, if you add a little baking soda, a pinch of salt, and some water to vodka or tequila, you won't be able to taste the alcohol. The revelation originated with a popular TikToker named Chixie38, who posts a lot of hack videos. Before she demonstrates how to make the alcohol taste disappear, she makes sure to say that this could be really dangerous and make it a little too easy to drink for some people. The video's been up for more than a month and has been watched over 18 million times, inspiring many people to have their minds blown trying it for themselves. Some commenters were not impressed by this hack, however, pointing out that this combination is basically just the ingredients of club soda. Someone on Reddit even made a thread about it, poking fun at the creators, joking, "Next up, let's go crazy and mix alcohol and juice."
What is the point?
What's the great rid of the alcohol taste?
Yeah,
what's
I mean, point? If you're having tequila or vodka, why would you want to kill the taste by adding baking soda, water, and salt?
Yeah, I mean, this I guess for weird. Some people, we more drink more quicker, I guess, something like that.
Have flavored seltzer. Did you know most of the seafood on display at your grocer has been thawed out just to look fresh? Unless you cook it on the boat, peak freshness only happens when it's frozen right after it's caught. That's what they do at Wild Alaskan Company. Wild Alaskan Company delivers high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood right to your door. Premium cuts, ready to prepare, easy to cook. Choose from salmon, cod, halibut, and more, with different specials to explore every month. And they offer a 100% guarantee or your money back. I got the Wild Combo Box and couldn't be more impressed. Each piece of fish individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Very environmentally conscientious. Wild Alaskan Company's seafood is how nature intended it to be. Never farmed or modified, and no antibiotics. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's Wild Alaskan, A-L-A-S-K-A-N. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Use that URL to let them know that we sent you.
Thanks for being with us. Don't forget to check out a podcast of the program. You can find it on our website, thismorningwithgordondeal.com. It's not too early to think about when to ship Christmas gifts. The nation's three largest carriers, FedEx, UPS, and the United States Postal Service, have released their 2021 holiday shipping deadlines, which are the recommended last day to ship gifts. The dates are almost identical to 2019 and 2020 deadlines. But consumers should brace themselves for late packages and possible disappointment, even if they meet the cutoffs. Amid the coronavirus pandemic and with widespread supply chain disruptions, the Postal Service also started implementing changes this month, which further slows the speed of the service and added a temporary holiday price increase. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The U.S. will lift restrictions at its land borders with Canada and Mexico for fully vaccinated foreign nationals in early November, ending historic curbs on non-essential travelers that have been in place since March of 2020. The rules will cover land borders and ferry crossings. They're similar but not identical to planned requirements announced last month for international air travelers.
Number two.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Democrats could slash entire pieces of President Biden's economic plan to push it through Congress. Party leaders have acknowledged they will likely have to cut $1 trillion or more from their $3.5 trillion social safety net and climate proposal.
At $3.5 trillion, we were doing everything well. So not a question of now we're doing it well because it's less money. But the fact is that if there is are fewer dollars to spend, their choices to be made.
Pelosi did not say which pieces of the proposal could get cut.
Number three.
Authorities say Gabby Petito, the Florida woman whose disappearance led to a wide-ranging investigation into her fiancé, died from strangulation. Teton County, Wyoming coroner Brent Blue.
As far as the time of death, we are estimating 3 to 4 weeks from the time that the body was found.
Authorities are still searching for Petito's fiancé, 23-year-old Brian Laundry. Evacuation orders have been expanded for a growing wildfire driven by intense winds that has shut down a key Southern California highway. At least 200 firefighters are battling a fire that has scorched 21 square miles along coastal Santa Barbara County and is only 5% contained. The flames forced the closure of the 101, the only major highway on that section of the coast. No shot, no hoops. Seven-time All-Star guard Kyrie Irving will not be allowed to play or practice with the Brooklyn Nets unless he gets a COVID vaccine. Irving had been practicing with the Nets but is ineligible to play in home games because of New York City's vaccination mandate. And changing medical advice about aspirin, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force says older adults without heart disease should not take daily low-dose aspirin to prevent a first heart attack or stroke. The panel says bleeding risks for adults in their 60s and up who haven't had a heart attack or stroke outweigh any potential benefits from aspirin.
All right, thank you, Jen. Coming up next, a very touching firefighter moment.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get where you want to go. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Thanks for being with us. A Montana firefighter has gone viral thanks to a photo that shows him sitting in the middle of a street reading a book to a little girl who just survived a car wreck. First responders were called to the scene of a two-vehicle crash in Billings. While the car sustained major damage, there were no injuries. Allie Marie Schmaltz, a bystander, took the photo of a firefighter reading a book to comfort the young girl and posted it on Facebook. Fire officials identified the firefighter as 26-year-old Brian Benton of Billings Engine 4. Billings Firefighters Media Coordinator Cameron Abell says Mr. Benton took it upon himself to read a story to the girl while her parents dealt with the accident, which happened at the end of September. Mr. Abell said in a statement, "As this photo shows, our people are the light on a cold, scary night. They will be there for you when your darkest moment happens." That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do.
Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.